days ago, I got an email. It read, "Hi Zachary, HBO recently aired a documentary on Bitcoin titled Money Electric, covered in New York Times, New Yorker, etc. As you might know, Bitcoin was invented by an anonymous individual. The film ends with the filmmaker confronting the man he suspects, a developer named Peter Todd. A lot is being made of Peter's body language and behavior, which is admittedly strange. The director keeps retweeting people saying they believe it is Peter because of his reaction. I would love to hear your take. The concrete evidence is very thin, so his reaction is a main piece of evidence." That email came from a cryptocurrency expert named Jeremy Clark. This episode will mostly consist of a talk that I had with Jeremy about this after I watched the Money Electric documentary based on his recommendation. Jeremy and I discuss a statement Peter Todd made on an early Bitcoin forum, which is the primary piece of evidence in the theory that Peter is Bitcoin's creator. And we discuss Peter's behavior when he was confronted by the filmmaker. This is the People Who Read People podcast with me, Zachary Elwood. This is a podcast aimed at better understanding people. You can learn more about it at behavior-podcast.com. If you like my work, please hit subscribe and share it with others. That's how you can encourage me to spend more time on these projects. A few quick notes on this. This episode will make the most sense if you've seen the Money Electric documentary first. I think you'll be able to follow it either way, but it will probably just be the most enjoyable if you've watched the movie. I want to emphasize that I went into this knowing almost nothing about Bitcoin or theories about who Satoshi was. After Jeremy sent me the email, I watched the documentary, read a couple articles online, and jumped on a call with him. As you'll see, I am quite ignorant about these topics, but I thought this minimal research approach would work out okay because it gave me a chance to share my initial reactions and thoughts, which are reactions and thoughts that I think a lot of people probably had watching this, and that gave Jeremy a chance to push back on and correct some of my more ignorant reactions. One interesting thing about this episode to me is how my initial confidence in the filmmaker's theory gave way as Jeremy educated me to more doubt and uncertainty. This meta-level point is something Jeremy and I talk about too, how we can be drawn to stories that make us feel that we've understood something, even when our understanding is quite wrong or quite partial. We can be especially drawn to stories that are exciting, or stories that make us feel we're in possession of some secret special knowledge. I'm honestly a little bit embarrassed of some of the things I say towards the beginning of my talk with Jeremy, because in hindsight it seems obvious to me that of course many smart people have been poring over this topic for many years, so it's rather silly to think that this filmmaker or I would have amazing insights that others very close to this hadn't already carefully considered by now. To be specific, I'm embarrassed at my saying to Jeremy in this talk that I found the evidence, quote, really persuasive, because in hindsight, my confidence was partially due to my immense ignorance in this area. Another thing I'm a bit embarrassed about was my initial excitement after watching the documentary at the idea of closely analyzing the language patterns found in Peter's and Satoshi's posts. As I talked to Jeremy, I quickly realized that, of course, people have already looked into those areas in depth. These points about the allure of exciting and simplistic stories is something I think about a lot in my work on political polarization-related topics. The truth is that we're drawn to simplistic stories in all aspects of our lives, from stories about our politics and political groups, to stories about how the world in general works, to stories about our own personalities and personal lives. And simplistic stories are tempting and can draw us in, but they do come with a price because they're often quite inaccurate and misleading and lead us in dangerous directions sometimes. A little bit about my guest, Jeremy Clark. He's an associate professor at Concordia University in Montreal, Canada. His website is pulpspy.com. That's pulpspy.com. Jeremy's website bio says that he mostly works on, quote, security and cryptography with real-world applications to finance and democracy. Okay, without further ado, here's the talk I had with Jeremy Clark. Hey, Jeremy. Thanks for showing me this story, and it's very interesting. And I wonder if, do you want to start by giving your thoughts about whether Peter Todd is Satoshi, and then I can give my thoughts, or do you want to do it that way?
Sure. Happy to. So this documentary came out for HBO from HBO, and it pointed to someone called Peter Todd as potentially the person who invented Bitcoin. So I know Peter. I've met him before at various events very long time ago. There's even a picture with a bunch of people around a dinner table, and it's in the film just for a split second, and I am in that picture.
Oh,
But
cool.
it frames me out, so I wasn't sitting close enough, and it wanted to zoom in on Peter. But yeah, so I guess let me just say, like, sort of a high level way of how I think about the question. So I think of everyone like sort of walking around with kind of a needle that's somewhere between 0% and 100% chance of being Satoshi, right? And so Peter's needle is definitely a lot higher than an average person that you're going to pick off the street. He does have experience on the development side. He has a longstanding interest, which you can see through forum posts and things like that, on digital cash. He has developer experience, and so he ticks a lot of those boxes. The problem for me is that there's probably, by my count, maybe 10,000 other people that would kind of tick those boxes as well. And you also have a kind of reverse causation where, if you do a project like Bitcoin, you're going to attract those people. Those are the people who are going to come,
Right.
right?
So they'll
So
be
they're going
involved with it
to.
early on and be around it. Yeah.
Exactly. So it's not the fact that you're involved early isn't necessarily evidence that you're Satoshi. It just means that, the project drew you into the spotlight. And then of course you're going to have lots of people around the project that are very capable of creating it.
Exactly.
Yeah. So what I would say is just that from what I saw of the film, it didn't move the needle. Okay, so I'm not saying he's not Satoshi. I'm not saying he is.
Right. It wasn't
But whatever
convincing
his,
to, yeah.
yeah, whatever his needle was at before, they brought forward a bunch of evidence, and it didn't change it.
Gotcha. Do you want me to talk about my thoughts now?
Yes, I'd love
So
to hear them.
you had contacted me about behavior, which, as I was telling you via email, like, and I've said many times on my podcast and such, like, I'm quite skeptical about drawing major conclusions from nonverbal behavior. I am much more a believer in statement analysis, analyzing statements, which is just, it's not about really behavior at that point. It's just about analyzing, making logical deductions of what people say and the way they say it and the way they phrase things. So yeah, what really stood out to me, I was skeptical going in because I read a little bit about it, and I was like, how much could this very clearly smart person, give away, considering like he hasn't been a major, suspect so far. Like, so I was skeptical, but I will say the thing that stood out to me was the state the forum post itself. And I'll actually share the screen here because it probably helps us talk about it 1 second. Yeah, so the part where they talk about this thing where Peter Todd's account on an old Satoshi post in a forum, Peter Todd follows up with the post. It was like apparently a minute and a half after Satoshi posted or something, and or maybe it was an hour and a half. I can't remember offhand, but
Yes,
I'll
yeah,
add that.
90 minutes,
Yeah,
roughly.
90 minutes. Yeah. So I mean, this to me really just stood out as like I find this like really persuasive evidence that Peter Todd is Satoshi because I mean he didn't even get into it in the documentary, but the language here, like, of course, to be specific, like that to me does not sound like something somebody responding to someone would say. Like, just thinking about how anybody would respond, how I would ever respond to somebody who was like well known in the community and is clearly extremely smart, and you're saying, of course, to be specific, like you're clarifying something, like it's a continuing thought, which is what they say in the documentary. Like, this seems to be a continuing thought, and he was logged into the wrong account, and he had only recently made the Peter Todd, or Peter Todd had only recently made his account on that form, apparently. So it makes sense that he might have confused the accounts. That to me really stood out as like, I really find that hard to explain other than Peter Todd being Satoshi. This is not to say I'm like confident, you know, certain, but I do find this like really persuasive evidence. And then you have, so this brings up other lines of questions for me. For example, just a note that I edited out some of our talk here. I'd gotten confused by the fact that in the documentary, the filmmaker had added ellipses to both Satoshi's and Peter's posts. I had thought there was potentially some clue in the use of the ellipses, but the ellipses were not present in the original posts. This gets back to what I was saying in the intro. I was getting excited thinking about the various clues that might be present in the language, when of course people have been poring over these things in excruciating detail already. Back to the talk. I would wonder also to look at this specific post for Peter Todd, like the asterisks around exactly. I would wonder if Satoshi often did that. I would even look for like the phrase to be specific, because there's little minute things like that. If you can find people often using them, can be a clue to like whether it's the same person. But just alone the, of course, to be specific, I'm just imagining putting yourself in Peter Todd's position. He's like, he claims to have barely been in the, you know, Bitcoin space at that time. He claims, you know, and that was the other thing they mentioned in the documentary, the fact that he claims to have not really been that detailed about the thinking then. So for him to make a very, you know, to clarify Satoshi's post of all people soon after Satoshi posted is about a very minute technical detail is pretty strange. And then you added in that the surrounding things about like Peter Todd's new account, the fact that both of them went silent on that board for really long after that at the same time. All these things, but even just this, like leaving aside all these other things, just this post, the language of course, to be specific, just to me sounds like someone clarifying their own language and not something you would ever say to somebody, a third party who's, especially somebody who's like much more respected to you. I don't know. What do you think of that language choice there? Do you think I'm making too much of that?
Yeah, so the well, let me say a few things about everything. So first off, in the film, they do show the long version of the post, but then later to like sort of stylistically emphasize it, they kind of pull that thought closer to what it looks like he might be correcting from Satoshi. I would say, you know, you have to put yourself in a bit of a time machine here in 2010. You know, Bitcoin, I don't know what it's worth. In like how much a Bitcoin is worth, probably less than a dollar or something like that. And so yes, Satoshi did invent the system and it's attracting a lot of attention. But at the same time, it's not, you
Super
know,
well,
it's not the Bitcoin that we know today, and Satoshi's
right.
not the Satoshi that we know today.
So
And
people would
so
speak more informally to him and yeah, correct
agree,
him,
agree.
yeah, disagree with
Yeah.
him, correct him, yeah. I
And for computer scientists especially, they tend to be they tend to be like very informal and sometimes a little hostile. And Peter Todd has a reputation for being a bit of a troll. And so
right. Yeah, no, I get that. And those are reasons why you know, I am far from certain, but I do just find this specific phrasing to be specific. It's like, I just find that, you know, and maybe, you know, that'd be something interesting to look into. Like, has he used that language when correcting people in the past or in other places? Like, and maybe it's a Canadian thing or something, you know. These are reasons why I don't like drawing like firm, really firm conclusions, but I do just find like the immediate follow-up and this specific phrasing, like to be specific. I just can't imagine myself ever saying to be specific to somebody else. But I mean, you know, it's possible, like, especially if you're being, you know, like you say, he's rather troll-like and often like corrects people, right? So I can see where it's like he's almost like speaking for him, like, well, you know, what you meant to say was this. I could kind of see that. I just find that combined with some of the other details, I do find quite strange. And then, yeah, I don't know if you want to respond to that more or.
I'll just sort of dilute your confidence a little bit more.
Sure. I
So
like
one
that.
person did, I did see on Twitter, I didn't reconfirm this, but I expect it's probably true. So they did look to see whether Satoshi ever put things in asterisks, like the word exactly, and never did.
Oh, nice. Okay. Well, that's
So
okay.
that was one thing. The other thing is, this is where I could actually contribute something because I kind of understand the conversation at a technical level. And so in the film, it was sort of presented like maybe Well, it was presented as a continuation of thought, right? But I want to put the emphasis that this is a correction. Like Satoshi said something wrong, and this is a correction. And it's not even, if I say correction, usually you fix it. You're like, oh, you said this wrong. So why don't you know, this would be what would be right, or this is what you could do instead. And so this, in this case, it's like the you're wrong without the correction, right? And so it seems weird that you would like just be like if you followed up and you saw that you said something wrong, you would probably actually correct it, right? Whereas this is just sort of like, oh yeah, that's not right,
Oh,
but
I see what you're saying. Like, are you saying if Satoshi had made a mistake, he would just correct it himself? Is that what you're saying?
well,
Just
yeah,
in the
okay,
post?
so yeah, he could edit the post as well.
Hmm.
Or the problem is it leaves the issue hanging, right? So Satoshi says, oh, we could do it this way, right? Then Peter Todd comes along and says, oh, actually, basically, you can't do it that way. But then what is the way that you do it, right? And so that like neither Satoshi nor Peter say like, well, what could you actually do? Yeah.
Gotcha. I
And
mean,
then
oh, go ahead.
one other thing, I'll pour a little more cold water on it. So this is also something I haven't confirmed, but Peter Todd himself said and a few people in the documentary. Right now the post has Peter Todd's name on it, on that post, and that's because at some point he changed his screen name. And we're looking at the website as it exists today. But at the time that that post was made, he was using a pseudonym. And the pseudonym wasn't like, this is my understanding from what was said, was that it wasn't strongly tied to his identity. And so if it were a mistake and he realized it was a mistake,
He could have deleted it.
he could have deleted it, never
Yeah.
posted with that again,
Right.
not come along later and actually change it to his real name,
True. Yeah,
right?
that's a good, really good point. Yeah. Yeah.
But
That
then,
was, yeah.
yeah, some people thought, well, maybe it wasn't completely disconnected. Like some people
Right. So
didn't know that it was
maybe he
him.
felt he had to leave it there, and it would be suspicious to delete it if there was something tying him to the account. He felt he couldn't delete it theoretically. Yeah.
Yeah. So it leaves you just with uncertainty, but
Right,
that's
right.
another sort of a
Yeah, I
bit more
mean,
color around the issue.
I'm curious, is it unusual to you like that his post was like only an hour and a half later and quickly, the next one? And I was looking back at the post before that, and it seemed like there was, I guess they were regularly people. And the other thing, it was like pretty late at night for their, I assume what was their time zone. It was like 1:12. Satoshi's post was at 12. Peter's was at 1:30 a.m. So that's, I don't know, that's a little unusual too. But I mean, obviously computer people are late night people. He's young, so yeah, it doesn't mean much in itself. Yeah.
Right. So Satoshi's actually, people have done analysis on when he posts. And so there is like a sort of time spectrum and late at night Eastern. We don't know what time zone he was in either. So we don't know where what it corresponds to, but if he were sort of in Eastern time zone, it sort of looks like someone that maybe worked during the day and worked on Bitcoin at night. And then Peter Todd, I guess, was a student at the time, and so he might have a similar one. If it had come like 30 seconds later or a minute later, that would be
Yeah,
very natural.
that's
But
more.
then you probably wouldn't have the logout and the log into a new account either, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You make
But yeah.
good points. Yeah, you make good points throwing cold water on it, which is important. Yeah. Getting back to the idea that a lot of times in these cases I see so many people like just jumping on narratives about like it is or definitely isn't or but it's good to be uncertain and to embrace uncertainty. I was curious, is it strange, like the documentary person maker framed it as strange that Peter Todd, was said that he didn't have he wasn't really in the Bitcoin community that early or kind of downplayed his knowledge. Do you think it's strange, knowing what you know about the technology, that he made such a correction or comment on Satoshi's post back then when he wasn't doing that otherwise?
Yeah, so there was probably a greater conversation that got cut, so you don't really know. Like if someone asked me like when did you get into Bitcoin, it's sort of like It wasn't like I woke up one day
Right,
and I went
it's
from like zero
incremental.
to 100.
Yeah,
Yeah.
yeah.
Like you sort of get involved and you maybe post things. That post would suggest that he understands a lot of the details. Like there's a very technical detail called a UTXO unspent transaction output. And that whole post, like the technical premise of that, is based on properly understanding that piece of Bitcoin. And that piece is one of the last pieces that people understand. I teach Bitcoin. So when I teach them, like sometimes, or if I give a simple talk, I'll simplify that model. I won't go there because so it's one of the last pieces that you would sort of learn. So at the time he made that post, he definitely understood the protocol quite well. At the same time, I don't know what he actually said in the documentary about when he got in. And there
Right.
was a bit, there was Adam Back was also present in the documentary. And that question was also framed, it sort of tried to frame that he also was like sort of being elusive about how much he knew at certain times. And so I don't know how much of that was meant
Storytelling.
for Adam as opposed to Peter or both of them. And
Yeah, and to your point, I mean, I think I often don't like documentaries because they often do have such bias and it's such a short format. So you often just find that it's storytelling. Like people are telling a story. So they have to go through, dozens of hours or more of footage and pick and choose what they want to show. And that's honestly why I find a lot of documentaries just really misleading when you actually learn what happened. There's a lot more nuance compared to what they're trying to show. So totally agree with you there. Like I would love to see like the unedited footage, if he ever you and hopefully you would think he would decide to release that because that's theoretically more information to people for to sift through. I don't see why he wouldn't. But yeah, there's often a lot occluded in a documentary, and that's something you really have to be aware of when you're watching these shows.
Agreed, agreed. And Peter also tweeted something. He said, I met the filmmaker four times, and it wasn't obvious what his motive was until the very last meeting.
Right. Okay. So that's a good segue into, when it comes to the behavior, and I want to preface this by, I often say, like, I find it really, all these people, these so-called behavior experts, which I've talked about recently on my podcast, these people who try to claim like you can get all these firm, findings from all these different behavioral, nonverbal things. I just find, almost people who claim that you can get a lot of stuff frequently out of nonverbal behavior are just bullshitting you, in my opinion. I thought at this point I could basically read the interaction that the filmmaker and Peter Todd had in the film. I would include the video, but often including video means that YouTube will give you a copyright infraction. This interaction comes near the end of the movie when the filmmaker gets Peter Todd and his colleague Adam Back out for one more recording and then confronts Peter. I want to emphasize again that we don't know how this interaction was edited. It'd be much better to see the original footage. I also want to point out that I might have made some minor errors in the transcription as some of the words were a bit unclear. Okay, here's the transcript with the filmmaker Hoback talking to Peter Todd and Adam Back. Todd, Satoshi's last post was like 1 week after I signed up for Bitcoin Talk, but Hoback, right, and then you disappeared. Todd, yeah, then I disappeared. Laughs. Hoback, and Satoshi disappeared at the same time. Todd, yeah, I really should have paid more attention to Bitcoin early on, but I had other stuff to do. Hoback, you corrected Satoshi, but it kind of looks more like you were continuing a thought of Satoshi. Todd, well, Satoshi made a little brain fart on like how exactly transactions work, and I corrected him on that very boring thing. Hoback, why didn't you delete the 2010 post? Todd, why would I? Hoback, well, I mean, because it just makes you look like you had these deep insights into Bitcoin at the time, and then Todd, well, yeah, I'm Satoshi Nakamoto. Hoback, I mean, it's sort of the last thing you'd expect Satoshi to say. Todd, but that's it. That's like the meta level, right? Because I know you'd expect Satoshi Nakamoto to delete the post. You just said, why didn't Satoshi Nakamoto delete the post? Adam Back, the post that was corrected? Hoback, yeah, the correction post. Todd, but then I did the next level of meta and then didn't delete the post to throw off people like you. Back says, "Yeah, I don't know. You're feeding him like footage that's just going to be Todd. Oh, it's going to be great." A few minutes later in the documentary, it returns to their talk. "Hoback, so here's what I think happened. Possibly. Todd, possibly. Hoback, okay, I think that John Dillon was created so that you would have an excuse to make Replace by Fee, a concept which you had envisioned years earlier, but you needed some kind of cover in order to make. And you also needed some cover for that 2010 post. Todd, 2010 post. Yeah, because I was Satoshi. Hoback, I mean, yeah, you know, you're very concerned about all the privacy stuff, so you reach out to your old buddy Adam Back, who said, we need to do something about this, but we need to pay the devs, but you can't join Blockstream because it would look too suspicious, so you don't. Todd, I will admit you're pretty creative. You come up with some crazy theories. It's ludicrous. But it's the sort of theory someone who spends their time as a documentary journalist would come up with. So yeah, I'll say of course I'm Satoshi, and I'm Craig Wright. And yes, I was definitely covering that little bit about, you know, fees to go pretend to be Satoshi, or not Satoshi, one or the other. Hoback, well, why make up the whole John Dillon thing? Todd, well, like I said, I'm not John Dillon. Hoback, okay. Todd, sorry, I'm not John Dillon. I don't know who that is. I'll warn you, this is going to be very funny when you put this into the documentary and a bunch of Bitcoiners watch it. Hoback, well, I don't think they would be very happy with this conclusion, because you're pretty controversial within the community at this point. Todd, no, I suspect a lot of them will be very happy if you go this route, because it's going to be like yet another example of journalists really missing the point in a way that's very funny. Hoback, what is the point? Todd, the point is to make Bitcoin the global currency. And people like you being distracted by nonsense can potentially do good on that. Back to the talk. Behavior is very hard to interpret, you know. So let's take this specifically, this example of, you know, clearly Peter wasn't comfortable. But what does that really mean? It's like, if he's innocent or guilty, he's going to be uncomfortable in that spot. Basically, like suddenly, you know, being set up to be accused of this narrative, right, on camera. Like anybody would be uncomfortable. So there's that element. Then you have to add in that the fact that Peter is kind of a troll and a contrarian, and he's like to, you know, play with the idea that he is Satoshi. So whether he's innocent or guilty, we can understand why that results in a weird behavior dynamic where he's kind of like trying to have it both ways, like kid around, like maybe I am, but clearly he's very uncomfortable by the idea. And you could see why he would be uncomfortable. Even if he tries to make light of it, it's like that's theoretically a life-changing accusation to be thrown at suddenly. So he's like, you could, even if he was innocent, or I guess innocent's not the word, if he wasn't Satoshi, then you can see why he'd have all these conflicting ideas that would make him behave in unusual ways. So that's just to say, for this and for many spots where, you know, so-called behavior experts sometimes try to get a lot of information, it's like, this is a very complex dynamic, and you can imagine all sorts of things running through his head at that moment that make him behave in uncomfortable, strange ways, that make him say strange things that you'd be like, why would he say that, right? It's just and especially with this dynamic of like people liking to say that they're Satoshi, right? Like that clearly adds another level of weirdness to it. So, but I'm curious, you know, what do you think of all that?
So actually, this is why I asked you, was I wanted to hear your thoughts on it. I have no expertise in reading people or trying to figure out if someone's bluffing or not. And so what I do know though is that the filmmaker was promoting his reaction as positive evidence that he was Satoshi. So he tweeted some things to that effect, retweeted other people, you know, saying that. He sort of talked a bit about one thing I thought was good. He said in an early interview that he didn't think the case could be solved just by internet facts. Like everyone's pored over everything you can learn online. And so I'm going to go and meet people face to face and just see where it goes. And I'll get their reactions. And that's what I can do sort of as a documentary filmmaker that a lot of other people wouldn't do or couldn't do.
Yeah, I did
But
see him
yeah.
saying, I saw one tweet the filmmaker made where he was pointing to Todd looking at what's his name, his mentor,
Adam
essentially.
Back.
Adam Back, and it claiming and making the point that Todd seemed to be looking at back as if like he was a father figure who he needed support from, and that was an e evidence that like he was looking to this guy who helped him, you know, h maybe hide his identity, and we're looking to him for support. And it's like, that's not conclusive. That's not any sort of evidence for anything, because like I said, like there's reasons for Peter to be uncomfortable, and you would look to somebody else for support and be like, what do you think of this stuff, right? Like that to me doesn't mean much.
A quick clarification here. I realized that that wasn't the filmmaker, but that was somebody replying to the filmmaker. But the point still remains that many people were reading a lot into the various behaviors from Peter Todd.
I think we have to be very careful with not seeing what we want to see, right? And like clearly the filmmaker was painting a narrative that he, you know, that he believes. So we have to be very careful to not see what he's telling us to see and then read in our interpretations of like, he seems uncomfortable, he said something weird. I'm going to use that for to as a reason to trust highly trust this story, this accusation, right? I just think for all these reasons, we really need to work against our desire for certainty, or our desire to believe a narrative that someone else has told us, right? I think those are in the political realm and our personal lives. It's like there's all these narratives that we can find ourselves embracing that have much more nuance behind them, right? But we like a simple story, and we're going to embrace that, and then we're going to use that belief in that narrative to filter for like reasons for why the behavior adds up, for some reasons to believe that narrative, right? So yeah, I didn't see anything, you know. I might add more to this, more thoughts later. I mean, I did find, you know, I think one thing that was clear was Peter seemed quite defensive and didn't seem to really directly defend himself very well. But then you add in the fact, like, you know, on the other hand, he's being accused suddenly. He's probably not thinking his best in the moment. He's clearly somebody that has liked to play with the idea that he could be Satoshi, so he's not really going to feel the need to defend himself that strongly, right? Because he doesn't want to sound defensive too. So, you know, for all these reasons, whether he is Satoshi or not, you can understand different reasons for why he behaved the way he did. And that was my takeaway from that interview scene, yeah.
Yeah, that's great. I love that analysis. And I think it probably did catch him off guard.
Yeah, I think so. He seemed very uncomfortable, yeah.
Yeah. And add him back too, there was an earlier scene where they were sitting on the bench and he kind of did the same thing with Adam Back, and Adam Back was like, oh, I was hoping that you wouldn't ask me about Satoshi because I'm not like it was it sort of it felt like they had sunk a lot of time together. And then he was getting around to the Satoshi question, almost kind of sabotaging it at the end. And so I don't know if that happened with Peter, but based on his tweet of you know doing about four recording sessions before like understanding that that's what the film was about, I it probably like just came out of you know it was probably just a surprise
Right,
question. It wasn't,
a purposeful gotcha kind of moment to put him on the spot, you know, which I think is, you know, pretty clearly what he was trying to do. Do you have any other thoughts on the whole thing? One thing I'm curious about is, you know, say it came out that, you know, Peter was definitely Satoshi, or, you know, definitely not Satoshi if it was proven to be somebody else. Would you be that surprised either way with what you know, or do you just have kind of an uncertainty range of like, it could be, it could not be?
I think I would be a little surprised that it was him. I feel like I just feel like the personalities don't match. Now, maybe if he's pretending to be Satoshi, like the theory of the film is that he wouldn't be taken seriously because he was so young. And so maybe he's adopting this persona of like sort of more mature and stately and those types of things. But their personalities really seem quite different. And so that would be the piece that would sort of surprise me. But everything else could fit. I mean, he has the technical capability. He's smart enough to have done it. And the fact that his age was so young also doesn't, I don't like, there's lots of people that have invented things in computer science as teenagers that were quite remarkable. So yeah, but anyways, I would,
Oh, go ahead. Yeah.
yeah, I would be surprised to learn that it was, and he could prove it if he was Satoshi. That's a provable thing. So Satoshi has these keys that more or less he knows if Peter not sorry, if Peter Todd somehow knew them and was able to use them, he at least got them from Satoshi or someone who knew Satoshi, whether he is Satoshi, but
Do you
yeah.
think
But
do
you
you think
can't prove a negative, right? So you can't prove that you're not.
unless somebody else was proven somehow to be him,
Sure. Yeah, so you
do you think I mean, accounting for the personality differences in the posting styles, do you think that could be, I mean, theoretically, if Peter Todd was Satoshi, could it be a factor of like Peter basically working with Adam or somebody else to, you know, finesse this public image? Like it could be a group effort would help explain differences, and then they would do their best to remove any identifying language, you know, markers and things like that.
Yeah, so the group hypothesis for Satoshi's floated a lot. A lot of people think it could have been a group. I think it's too complicated. Like Satoshi stuck around for a year plus, answering questions. And the idea of having two people do that is too complicated in my mind. And you don't remember like who answered what. And the person who was answering knew this. They answered questions about every aspect of the system. So they knew in a consistent voice, they knew the system inside and out.
And
And so the simplest explanation is just that it's one person.
also the kind of not professional level coding would lend support to that it was one person probably, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Satoshi wasn't a superhero. He did something like remarkable. Like Bitcoin is a big technical achievement, but he wasn't perfect across the board. His code wasn't perfect. Even the idea, like a lot of it was a unique combination of ideas, but it was existing ideas. It wasn't
Right.
invented completely from scratch. And so, yeah, so he's not like a godlike figure.
Right, two or more people might have made better code, would probably have resulted in better code and saw things that he wouldn't have seen if he was.
Yeah, but then you get into inconsistencies because, like, the one person that coded the one aspect, there's a question about it. So that person has to answer that question. And then the other person has to answer the other questions. And so you have this sort of like split
Right.
personality that would emerge with all the emails and the forum posts and things like that. It's just, I'm not saying it's impossible, but it's a much simpler
Right.
example. And the only reason that people want it to be a group is just because they think it's too big for one person. Right. And so I think, but my suggestion is that it's
It's
not too
not.
big for one person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so getting into the realm of the vibe of the documentary, how do I know you're not running interference for Peter Todd and you weren't hired by, I'm just mostly kidding here,
Yeah.
but
Yeah.
that's kind of a humor. I thought that was a humorous way. Maybe you're working for Peter Todd, or maybe you're working for the government, the CIA, you know.
Yeah, so the whole CIA thing was interesting because there was no like logic to it, but it was just sort of like they kept coming back to it. Like maybe Peter worked for CSIS, which is our CIA in Canada, and oh, Satoshi was mad that Gavin Andreessen went to the CIA and talked about Bitcoin. And then there was this like other persona that was invented that was like a government agent. Or sorry, no one knows this, John Dillon. So maybe Peter invented John Dillon or it was a real person. And yeah, and so it was kind of like he was kind of like trying to paint this like intelligence into Satoshi's story, into Peter's story. And then somehow you were supposed to just think that like that somehow leads to evidence that Peter is Satoshi, but there's no logic to it. It's just sort of it's association, right?
Right.
But
Yeah,
yeah.
that's what I did. Yeah, again, that's what I didn't like about the documentary and documentary a lot of documentaries in general is like I would have liked to seen the things that we're talking about in here more in the movie. Like, what are the arguments against this as opposed to just like I'm gonna paint my narrative, right? Or at the very least, nod to the fact that there are a lot of ambiguities and uncertainties and tell people where to find those ambiguities and uncertainties at the end, you know? Like I feel like that kind of approach to documentaries is much more responsible than like I have this narrative, even though people can clearly disagree with me. I'm gonna tell you, I'm gonna paint all these this picture of why you should believe my narrative. Yeah, I would have much rather seen some of the arguments that we got into in this talk in the movie, right? But there is
Right.
this incentive, you know, like there's an incentive to create the grand narrative, right, for these documentaries, because it's like that gets attention, that gets people talking, right? So I think even if I don't know what, you know, what the filmmaker really believes, but like even if he had a lot of doubts about his suppositions, there is an incentive for him to draw those conclusions in the documentary to get people talking and to spark debate and get attention and make money, right? Like, I'm not saying that's why he did it, but I'm just saying there are those incentives, and I think we need to draw attention to those and draw attention to the uncertainty more. Yeah,
100%. I think that was the one piece that was missing, was some critical thought about it. And then the other piece, which I think someone brought up on Twitter too, is that he didn't really go back and interview family and friends and people that would have known him at that time. And this is in contrast to some of these other Satoshi, like this isn't the first documentary to suggest the name for Satoshi. There's probably been 10 newspaper articles. Like one of the most famous was Dorian Nakamoto. This was it Newsweek? And I actually listened to a podcast recently with the reporter who reported that story. I was wondering if like, did she change her mind? Because nobody believes it. In fact, I think in this documentary, they make fun of it too. Mm-hmm. I might be misremembering that. But one thing, and she does, so she still sticks to her guns. And one thing she said is, well, I just talked to his family so much. And I talked to the parents and the siblings, and no one could really account for what he did. And he was always very secretive about work. And I didn't find like the reasons conclusive, but at the same time, you know, she put a lot of effort into trying to interview people and try and understand the context of where that person was at that particular time.
Right.
I didn't see any of that. Maybe it didn't make it into the film, but it seemed like there was this confrontation, and they talked to Adam Back, but they sort of got to Peter Todd via Adam Back, but they didn't talk to anybody else who knew Peter, you know, or did any sort of investigation of what his life was like at that time.
Yeah, I would really like these documentaries to end with like, go to this URL to see, you know, resources and counter arguments, right? Like that would be a responsible thing. I mean, especially if you're making accusations that are life-changing about people, right? It's like, show people where to go to show that there's some nuance and more information and do your own looking at it or whatever. But yeah, it disappoints me that more documentaries don't do that.
And then to answer your early question, there is no way I can prove that I'm not running interference for Peter or anything like that. But I do have like a pretty long history working in this space, and you can see that I have lots of publications and books. And I even like, I talk a little bit about Satoshi, and we wrote a textbook, or some colleagues at Princeton University wrote a textbook on Bitcoin, and I wrote the foreword to it. And I talk a little bit at the end. And so this is a question that I've been interested in sort of long before I ever met Peter Todd, way before this documentary came out. And so, yeah, that's my defense.
And to be clear, I was kidding with that. But
I
do want to thank you, Jeremy, because this is something that was interesting. I actually watched the end of the documentary twice because it was so interesting, and it's something I probably wouldn't have looked at for a while if it wasn't for you reaching out. So I just wanted to thank you.
Yeah, pleasure, and I thank you also for looking at it. I think you're well positioned to comment on, in particular, the sort of behavioral stuff at the end.
Thanks, appreciate it.
That was a talk I had with cryptocurrency expert Jeremy Clark. A couple more thoughts about Peter Todd's behavior in the movie. Some people were reading a lot into Peter's meta-level stuff, like when he was saying, if I were Satoshi, I'd know you'd think that, so I'd do this, that kind of thing. To me, it's entirely believable that someone like Peter would engage in this kind of meta-level bantering and would enjoy messing with people's minds, no matter if he was Satoshi or not. So to me, that doesn't mean much. Another thing people focused on was Peter getting upset. I myself went back and forth as to whether this was meaningful or not. In the end, I don't find it a meaningful thing either way. I find it easy to imagine Peter, in either scenario, whether he was Satoshi or not Satoshi, reacting in either angry or calm ways. The truth is, as with a lot of behavior, it's just so easy for people to go down different emotional paths. Now, clearly there's a lot of uncertainty in all of this, but I will say that one thing I keep thinking about after my talk with Jeremy is that forum post by Peter Todd, which reads, "Of course, to be specific, the inputs and outputs can't exactly match." The phrase "to be specific" seems to me to be something that someone says to clarify something they themselves have said. Imagine hearing someone say a sentence that starts with "to be specific," and imagine the context. To me, it's really only a phrase I'd imagine someone saying
to clarify something they just said, or maybe clarifying someone with whom they work closely with or something. It's hard for me to imagine someone following up something someone else said with, to be specific. That, coupled with the other assorted coincidences, strike me as quite strange. But the fact that other people don't seem to make much of that language, from what I've seen, makes me wonder if I'm just really off base with my instinct about it. Maybe it's simply more of an understandable and normal use than I think it is. That's totally possible. Sometimes my instincts are quite wrong. But it does make me curious if anyone's done work to see how common that phrase is when used to correct or clarify another person's speech. I would just predict that that specific usage is rather rare. I also wondered how often Satoshi followed up his posts with another short thought versus just editing his first post. If there were almost no instances of Satoshi following up a post with a short clarifying post, that would be meaningful to me. Another interesting thing that we touched on was the use of the asterisks around exactly. The fact that apparently Satoshi never used asterisks around words is important. You'd think you'd find at least one use of that if Peter were Satoshi. If it's definitely true that that was Peter's original post and it's known that it wasn't edited in some way, for example, Peter adding the asterisks shortly after posting to add a red herring to the mix, and if it's known that Satoshi did not use asterisks around words in that way, that all seems like it almost completely absolves Peter based on this evidence. If I wanted to show that this theory wasn't credible, that'd be what I would focus on. And it's likely people have already done this. Again, I'm not educated in this space and speaking very much as a newbie and off the cuff. In defending himself in more detail in an interview in Pravda, Peter says the following. That claim specifically is especially ridiculous. He's referring to this post. Peter links to the post. The thing is, that's the second post I made with that account. And at the time, the account handle was set to a pseudonym. If I had actually made that mistake, why on earth would I keep using that account rather than just discarding it and creating a new one? Why on earth would I change the account name to my legal name a few years later? It makes zero sense, and I think Cullen knows this. End quote. Peter's defense here doesn't strike me as that solid, though. For one thing, if Peter knew his pseudonym account could be tied to his real name using internet research, he would be incentivized to embrace the account as his own. If he ignored it or stopped using it entirely, that would be more incriminating, so he'd have an incentive to lean into it being his as a way to show he had nothing to hide. This is just to say that it's not a really solid defense, unless there was a way to prove that his old pseudonym account had zero way to be connected to his name. But again, as stated, I think this dynamic with Peter is rather unusual and not directly comparable to crime-related accusations. We know Peter may not at heart truly care about removing all beliefs that he is Satoshi. There are obvious positive incentives for not removing all doubt. Peter gets noticed, he gets fame. There are downsides too, of course, but just to say, there are also quite a few upsides. Also, Peter may simply believe, as he says, that it's silly to focus on such things. He may not care about mounting a strong defense. Just to emphasize that the unusual dynamics and incentives in this case make it very different from a case where someone has every incentive to prove their innocence. Again, in all of this, I'm not making any confident guesses. I'm only just dipping my toe in these waters. I realize that, as an amateur in this area, I'm very much at risk of reading too much into what might be small pieces of evidence. But I thought some people would be interested in seeing some of the back and forths and the thoughts that Jeremy and I had about all this. Thanks again, Jeremy Clark, for reaching out with this idea. I do appreciate it. Thanks for watching. Music by Small Skies.